All night long, Colonel Musi had to play the role of pace-setter and morale czar. He was good at it, pushing the prisoners just as far and as fast as they could go without collapsing. He didn't want to rest too long in any one place, not only because the Japanese might find them, but also because it seemed to him that momentum itself was keeping the march alive. The longer the break, the harder it was to get everyone moving again. He practiced the classic prevarication of the drill sergeant, distance deflation. "Just a few miles to go," he'd say, "just a few more," knowing perfectly well that they still had another 15 or 20 ahead of them. "Musi's miles stretched into more miles," said A.B. Abraham, who appreciated the psychology behind the colonel's white deceit. "But I didn't care because I was happy for the first time in years, sucking in the fresh air." In fact, the prisoners, even many of the sickest ones, grew more buoyant as the march progressed. With each mile, a visible euphoria grew on their faces. Abraham observed one gaunt man with tuberculosis, who had a permanent smile on his face. He said, "Oh, my folks'll be so happy." He gazed up at the stars and said, "Mother, I love you." Many prisoners seemed to gather strength as they went. The foretaste of freedom was like a blood transfusion. They responded powerfully to a carrot-and-stick motivation, the lure of home ahead, and the threat of Japanese Avengers at their backs. The other stimulus that kept the captives moving was the good cheer of the Rangers and the spirited conversation that filled the long hours. "The Rangers seemed as happy as we were," remembered Bert Bank. "All during the night they ran up and down the columns inquiring if anyone was from their hometowns." They talked about the exotic and fearsome new weapons the Americans were wielding throughout the world. Bazookas and flamethrowers, napalm and radar-equipped planes. They talked about the two wars, the war that was lost 3 years ago and the war that was now being won. "We wanted to know where they had been and what they had seen," wrote Tommy Thomas, "and they were anxious to know how it had been with us and whether it was as rough as they'd heard. We regarded them as heroes. They regarded us as heroes. It was a mutual admiration society." The Rangers wouldn't accept congratulations from the internees. They kept responding with demurrals like, "It was just a job," or, "You're the brave ones, not us." They didn't understand the extent to which the men of Cabana Tuan had instantly come to venerate them. They were a breed of men like none we'd ever seen before, is how John Cook described the Rangers. Another POW was more emphatic. "As far as I was concerned, they were gods." Yet even gods eventually get tired. As the night progressed, the Rangers grew noticeably sloppy and zombie-eyed from lack of sleep. Some began to doze or mildly hallucinate as they marched. One of the medics distributed a vial of little white tablets that were described as pep pills. It was the new pharmaceutical offering of the United States Army, the new sleep fighter, Benzedrine. During World War II, amphetamines became all the rage as a stimulant, with some 72 million tablets handed out to both Allied and Axis soldiers by the end of the war. Certainly, this was the first time any of the Rangers had taken speed. They found the drug both startling and wonderful. It increased the heart rate and breathing rate, dilated the pupils, pumped fresh adrenaline into the system. "We were having a devil of a time staying awake," recalled Ranger Homer Britzius, "but those bennies did the trick. It felt like your eyes were popped open. You couldn't have closed them if you wanted to." The Benzedrine worked so well that some of the men began to wish for a veterinary equivalent. "If only we could have given some of that stuff to those buffalo," one ranger said. "Then we really would have gotten somewhere."